Blog Talk Radio.
Take a Run Productions.
And welcome to Unknown Paranormal Radio on the Unknown Radio Network. I'm Kevin with Unknown Paranormal.
And I am Jeff, also from Unknown Paranormal. Happy Mother's Day to all of our mothers and to all the other mothers out there.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. What'd you get your mother?
I got my mother the perfect Mother's Day gift like 37 years ago.
Me?
No, me, not you.
Oh, I'm just filling in on what you're actually going to say.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody can get a more perfect Mother's Day gift than that. Come on.
Oh, man. Station identification on that note.
You're listening to the Unknown Radio Network. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/unknownPG. You are in.
And we're back.
That guy is awesome.
No.
I love that dude.
It's this guy.
This show is brought to you by the Unknown Radio Network, consisting of the very best selection of paranormal internet radio shows anywhere on the web. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Unknown Radio Network.
Now that guy... That's the guy I'm talking about.
He sounds like he's in the bottom of a well.
No, he's in the bottom of a can of whoop-ass that he opened up on somebody else.
He's
the
bottom of a can of something, all right. Ooh. Just so everybody knows, sometime this summer, we're going to have us a new intro.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. I'm cooking up some ideas right now about which way to go. Do I want to stick with the metal ass kicker theme, or do we want to go with something different, like dubstep or Gangnam Style or something like that?
Well, that's all on you. You figure it out, and we'll do it.
Awesome.
Unknown Paranormal is going to Arkansas next Saturday for an investigation of a 10-story tuberculosis sanatorium. So that should be exciting. If it is like it was last time, if we get the same kind of activity, that should be one hell of a night. There's five of us going, so be a cool little road trip for us. And, that's what's going on there. June 22nd, 21st and 22nd, myself and Shonda and my dad from Unknown Paranormal, we will be at the Shreveport, paranormal conference that they're having. They're starting up. It's a little bit different than any other conference. It's not the typical conference. But I will be there leading an investigation of a couple secret locations in downtown Shreveport. Dakota Lawrence will be there doing a gallery. Jeremy Jones will be there. And most of the other people are from around Louisiana. Some representatives of Louisiana Spirits will be there. So should be kind of interesting. See how that happens and how that goes. But that's what we're doing in June. They're offering to compensate me for going by letting us put a flyer of our conference in October in everything that they pass out to people. And they're spending a lot of money. So that'll help us.
Cool.
And remember, East Texas Ghost Con 2013, October 4th, 5th, in downtown Marshall, Texas at the Visual Arts Center. And as soon as I get the contract situated with this person, I have a new headliner for the conference.
Is it me?
So, no.
Oh.
You're already under contract.
Well, hell, what am I still here for?
You're under contract to do what I say.
Oh, hell no, look at that. That's not going to work. Not going to work at all. We'd let you know what's going on with Bravo Paranormal, but unfortunately, Martin's on his way home from work, so we can't do that this time. He's supposed to call in once he gets home.
Right. There was something else I was going to announce.
Oh, I have one. Can I make my announcement right now?
Yes.
The movie Iceman, starring Michael Shannon, has been officially released, and it also stars as an extra myself, Jeffrey Sterl.
Stars as an extra? You're probably in the background.
Well, duh, that's what an extra is.
Well, don't say star. Star means you have the camera on you.
Oh, it's pointed towards me, I'm sure.
Not panned by you.
Doesn't matter. I'm assuming that they use that scene.
Well, until it comes out and you actually watch it to see if you're actually in the actual cut, you're not in it yet.
I'll have to go see. It was released on May 3rd, but it was just a limited release right off the bat, and I think it's hitting more theaters on the 17th, which is this weekend.
Well, the only time you can say like a pan kind of shot counts is when you and I were in Straw Dogs in the football stands, because they did a wide shot and we were there, just not very big, and a whole lot of other people.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't. There's
a scene where, you know, that first 4 hours we sat towards the top of the stand on the one side.
Yeah.
There's a wide shot of that. So
did it get me on the orange side when I was wearing my blue and white face paint?
No, you got cut.
Damn.
Yeah. But that still counts. We were in it. Our scene made the cut.
Cool. Well, I know the scene I did, it made the cut for the first trailer that they did. But I don't know if they've kept it or not, obviously.
Right.
No, I can't wait to see it. It looks really good.
If you want to see somebody in a movie, about 40 seconds worth of scene.
Oh, God.
Check out W. Yeah, I'm in it. And I had one line, Mr. Bush.
Yep. You and about 10 other people.
Well, we were reporters. We had to. But
you know
the story. I'm not going in detail now because our guest will be calling in. But you know the story. I wasn't supposed to be in that scene, period.
Yeah.
And the fact that I got to shake hands with Oliver Stone and talk to him and talk to Josh Brolin and Elizabeth, God, what is her last name? It'll come to me later. But both of them have been in a lot of movies. Yeah.
Oh, if I'd been in that scene, I'd have just threw in my own question.
But the thing about it was, is I was in the suit, and it was like 110 outside.
Yes, it was.
And they gave me a fan to keep my makeup from running, and I look over, and Oliver Stone's got a bandana trying to fan himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt really good at that moment that I was getting a fan over Oliver Stone.
And people say I have an ego.
But now back to the original that I was going to say. I don't know. I got a few funny stories from Mother's Day. My travels to going to eat today was kind of funny. The discussions that we had in the vehicle with my mom, my dad, and my brother. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Because our guest tonight is Monica Rollins. And she was on an episode of Monster Quest. She's been a Bigfoot researcher for the last 4 years. She's part of the Texas Bigfoot Research Center. She's originally from Oregon, which that's a hot spot for Bigfoot, and that's where she grew up.
Pacific Northwest, yep.
She's never actually encountered Bigfoot, but she's always been interested in it. She's a big skeptic when it comes to some of the evidence that she has come across, that people send in, whatnot. She believes they exist, but, still skeptic, which that's what the field needs. You don't want all believers and no skeptics, right?
Absolutely.
You got to have a check and balance system.
Yep.
So Monica didn't realize that tonight was, today was Mother's Day when we booked it a long time ago. Neither one of us looked at the calendar. So she's going to call in for an hour of our, hour of the show and then go about her Mother Day business. So anyway, so then the second half of the show will just be myself and Jeff and hopefully Mark.
Cool.
So if anybody wants to call in, they can do that as well. The second half of the show, we'll have an open the phone lines up as well. I think I got everything that I need to say for now. But stay posted on who our headliner is, because it's someone that's on television right now in a television series, and that's all I'm going to say. Until I sign that contract with that individual and get it all official, then I'll announce it.
Cool. Hey, can I do a little segment here?
As long as, whatever. Go.
This is called Funny Text from Kevin. This is what I got earlier today. And I got to make Kevin's defense, he was driving, which you shouldn't do, by the way. You should never text and drive.
Well,
I said you should never do that. I didn't say me. This around 2:30 this afternoon, he texts me and says, I may not be on time for show. I said, okay, what's up? And Kevin responds with, leaving for Shreveport soon, comma, were her, W-I-R-H, parents to eat for, comma, Mother's Day. I said, what's cool? What's going on in Shreveport again? Casio Buffet. Now, when he said this, he meant to say Casino Buffet, but it came through as Casio. And, of course, I'm thinking, is that the name of a restaurant or something? So I'm like, huh? And he says, Restaurant in Casio. The buffet, damn you, have never been to Casio and ate buffet. And then he called me and said, I'm officially a dumbass.
You should have figured it out. But we'll talk about all that later. I got to send our make sure our guest is calling in. Here.
I saw that, and I thought, did Casio start, you know, getting into the restaurant business?
No.
I thought it was pretty funny. I've been trying to give up carbonation, and it's actually going well. But now I'm going through Gatorades and green teas like it's nobody's business.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you drink tea?
Well, because I got to have something to. Well, I drink green tea. I've got to have something I can take with me all the time.
We'll get you a thermos, but, you know, make you a big batch of tea or buy the gallon jugs like I do, already made sweet tea.
Yeah, but I got to take it to work and stuff.
But get you something to put it in, dumbhead.
They don't make a big enough container for that.
Boy. You could get one of them glass pitchers that's got the spout on it.
What the hell am I going to carry it in?
Oh, Lord. I think our guest, let's see, who is this? Is this?
That's DFW area code. And that's not Martin's number.
Hello.
It's Monica.
Hey, Monica.
How are you doing?
Hi. I'm good. How are y'all?
Good. Happy Mother's Day to you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Awesome. Now, Monica, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a Bigfoot researcher. I have been in to Bigfoot research formally since 2002. Do most of my research down here in Texas and parts of Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Arkansas. But I also do a lot of research up in the Pacific Northwest when I get the opportunity.
Cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm... I live in, I'm a friend of Ken Gerhardt, so I talk to him all the time.
Awesome.
Yeah, I live in East Texas. I live in Longview area, and Ken and I got in this discussion, and he told me that most of the reports that he gets are from the East Texas area, you know, as
mm-hmm.
far as most sightings because of all the wooded areas that we have over here.
Yeah, and it's
you
got the highest amount of rainfall in the state. So, yeah, for the state of Texas a lot, I would say the bulk of the reports do come out of East Texas. I mean, all along the Louisiana border, there's a bunch of sightings from that area.
Right. Yeah, when I was growing up, I lived in Texarkana, so I always heard about the Falk Monster.
Oh, it was right in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's pretty
yep.
cool.
Yeah.
I heard about that all throughout school as well.
Oh, did you? Where did you grow up?
Same area, East Texas, Northeast Texas.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's awesome. I grew up north of San Francisco. I grew up in Northern California. So I grew up, and I vacationed every summer up in southwestern Oregon. So
mm-hmm.
I grew up right in the heart of all of those Bigfoot
nice.
Stories, right in the middle of Bigfoot country.
Now, how many of these cases or reports would you say is just a case of mistaken identity?
I'd say a lot of the reports are. I wouldn't be able to put like a percentage onto it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in everybody that I speak to, all of the witnesses, well, I shouldn't say all of them. Some of them are just yanking your chain. Some of them are just out
right.
there to get attention or, you know, it's baloney. But from the people that I believe they saw something, I'd say in my own opinion, a good chunk of it is misidentification. They're seeing a bear
mm-hmm.
or they're seeing shadows and trees moving. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been shown a video where they're insisting to me that there's something in the tree line, and they believe it. They believe it truly. I don't think, you know, that they're always pulling my chain. I mean, I've had to look at video before where the person showing it to me honestly believes that there's something in the tree line, and all I see is a lot of light and shadows and moving tree limbs. You know? And I'm very skeptical of the Bigfoot thing. I mean, I cannot tell you that I believe for a fact that they're out there because I've never seen one. And I'm not somebody who's going to tell you, oh, I know they're there, without me having been able to verify it personally.
Right.
And I haven't had that opportunity yet.
Yeah.
Actually, it's actually right when Kevin and I first started getting into the paranormal, we were on a different team out of Kilgore. And the very first case that we went on, we got audio of something. And the guy, the leader of that team, sent it, I believe, to Ken.
Yeah, he did.
And he said, at least in his opinion, it was a Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's possible. We do get reports from paranormal investigators that they've had, you know, very, you know, squatch, to coin a term, squatchy things happen to them while they're investigating cemeteries specifically.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
especially down. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, especially with that, because the audio that we got, we heard this, you know, god awful sound, you know, and you know it was an animal, but I had never heard that before, and it just stopped us all. And at the same time, on the other side of the road, something huge, like 300-400 pounds. Jumped out of a tree because it knocked down a huge branch, and you hear this loud thump, and then something run off on 2 feet.
Oh, that's pretty straightforward.
if I'm not I think if I'm not mistaken, the sound that we actually heard in there, the sound of something galloping.
Right.
Well, on 2 feet, because you can tell the difference on being around animals, the sound of somebody on 2 feet or something on four. You know, it's got that distinctive sound. But I talked to a lot of my friends that do Bigfoot research, and they're like, yeah, we hear reports of that all the time. And I'm like, oh, Lord.
Well, I think that's great, and I love it. You know, we love to get those kind of reports because, you know, especially down here in the South, a lot of the older cemeteries are in very rural areas or forgotten cemeteries. I've found some pretty cool cemeteries that I've gone and done paranormal investigations in while I was Bigfooting. You know, I've gone back and gone in there. You know, and, you know, those sites, of course, lend themselves to Bigfoot activity. And, you know, I personally love to hear stories like yours where somebody's out there, you know, doing their paranormal thing. And, you know, Bigfoot might have been up in the tree checking you out, trying to figure out what you are doing with those weird things. And, you know, I think that's great.
Yeah. You know, and with I'm getting the discussion all the time with people in the Bigfoot field is, you know, paranormal and Bigfoot kind of go hand in hand with the fact that what we do and, you know, the kind of answers that we're trying to get, you know, none of us have. You know, we might have proof, we might not. It depends on who you show it to. It depends on if, you know, they're skeptical or what they believe in. But, it, you know, it's kind of the same thing. And, of course, in the Bigfoot community, it seems like you guys get a lot more people that are trying to pull your chain with evidence.
Well, do you really feel that way? Because, I mean, haven't had anybody try to BS it was an obvious
It's not necessarily like sending it directly to, you know, certain people. It's more like, well, the way the internet is set up now, you know, you have YouTube, so a lot of these people just, oh, look what I got, and post it on YouTube. And Ken was telling me last time I had him on the show of a video that was uploaded on the net. Two guys in, I think it was North Carolina, claimed to have shot and killed a Bigfoot, and they had a video and you could clearly tell, you could clearly tell that the supposed Bigfoot was a person in a costume laying down.
Yeah, that wasn't too elaborate.
Now, what's your thoughts of the original like Bigfoot video from the late 70s, early 80s?
The Patterson Gimlin film.
Yes.
The PG film. You know, I was asked that the other day. I have to tell you that, you know, I think it's real. I do. When you look at it, there was an episode of Monster Quest that I was on. And in that episode, they had taken the Patterson Gimlin film and they had stabilized it. And then they had run it through a filter. And it was so many years ago, I can't remember what kind of a filter it was. But it gave a little more definition than what you normally see on the film. And what really grabbed my attention in that was you could see as the creature turned to walk away from the camera, you can see the hair on the back of its neck standing up. And it went partially like down. It didn't just stop at the nape of the neck. It went all the way down between the shoulder blades. And it reminded me very much of a dog with its hackles up when it's scared, and the flow of the hair. And you could really, I mean, if you looked, you could see that. And that really shocked me because that's not something, of course, I had noticed in any of my previous viewings of the PG film. So that really lent itself to me to believe that it was that it's a legitimate film. And that's the only one that I have seen since or ever that I would say is 100% legit. I don't have any questions on the authenticity of it.
You don't believe? Now, I did see on History Channel or something here a while back, they did a special on some people that claimed that they set the whole thing up.
Well, yeah. See, that's the problem with video and photographs, is there's always going to be somebody out there, you know, naysaying, oh, that was me. Oh, there's been more than one person, I believe, that's come forward and said that they were the person in the suit and the PG, I believe. I don't really try to get into that kind of stuff. You know, I believe what I believe, and, you know, either you agree with me or you don't. I'm not going to get into some gigantic debate over what I think.
Sure.
You
know? Yeah.
So I can't be 100% that there was more than one person, but I believe there was more than one person that came forward saying they were the person in the suit. And like I said, with photographs and video, there's always going to be somebody saying that was doctored, that was me, that, you know, look at this, it's not real. There's always going to be something. You have to have hard evidence, such as a body, in my opinion. And a lot of people hate that thought. I am not going to be a popular person for saying that. I don't want to necessarily be the one pulling the trigger, but I'm also not naive enough to think that it's going to take anything less than that to prove it to science.
Right.
I remember seeing something, it was on another one of these documentary shows, and they interviewed some people from Tennessee. And these folks lived off in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And they I try to listen to claims and cases and stuff, but this one I kind of had to laugh at. And I hope for their sake that I'm wrong and they're right. Because these folks claimed that there was like a village of Sasquatch that lived not far from them, and that members of that village would come over to their house all the time and borrow milk and sugar and stuff. And I went,
and garlic, please.
Yes. Like, what? And nobody thought, hey, can I get a picture?
Yeah, you hear that a lot with some habituators. They'll claim that they've got, you know, 100 Bigfoot living out in the South 40 that they interact with on a regular basis, but they, you know, come up with a million excuses as to why they don't want to take a photograph or any kind of conclusive evidence. You know, they don't want to grab a hair sample off of them because that would upset them. They don't want to take a photograph because the camera scares them. You know, and they don't want to break the trust of their friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if that's what you believe, power to you. You know, I can't buy into that personally. If you are so close to something that is such a mystery and you're so adamant about, yes, they're real because they're living in my backyard, well, cough up some proof so people, you know, you want to be, you know, vindicated, I would think. Cough up some proof.
This day and age of cameras, the way we don't have to have flash anymore, and we can do IR cameras, there's no excuse now.
There is.
Oh, yeah.
You know. And even if
by the way, we have Mark on the line with us now.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
This is our third host, Martin Bravo from Bravo Paranormal.
Hey, yeah, sorry I'm late. I was kind of murdering an entire generation of crawfish. I was trying to hurry up and get home.
Hey.
Oh, nice. I told everybody you were at work. You made a liar out of me, Martin.
No,
sorry.
He was working on the crawfish.
Well, I guess so.
I was working on the crawfish, yeah.
Oh, man. I'm so
very now, cool. You know, I talked to some of my friends, and they're kind of in the same mindset as yourself as far as video and photographs in particular, because all the technology that's available to all of us, you know, that can doctor photos, or even people that buy these fancy cameras and really don't know what they're doing, you know, and they get this weird photo and they're like, oh, that's got to be a Bigfoot.
Yeah, well, I mean... I've been shown a picture of a tree stump with mushrooms and been told that that was Bigfoot standing next to the tree. The mushrooms were big. I'm not kidding you. And
oh, gosh.
Some of the stuff, yeah. I mean, here's my thing. If you have to draw red circles and arrows and explain to me where he is in the photograph,
mm-hmm.
You can keep the photograph to yourself. You know, I appreciate you trying to share your information with me. I appreciate you trying to enlighten me as to your point of view and why you think that they're, you know, in the shadows and you have to hold the camera behind your back to take the photograph. But, you know, I want a clear photograph and not a mask on a pole in the woods, because I pretty well sniff those out too.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I've seen it all.
Yeah, and like I was saying earlier before you came on, you know, just like in our field and in Bigfoot research, you got to have – it takes not only people that truly believe that Bigfoot exists, that are researching them and going out in the field and whatnot, but you also got to have people that have the skeptical side. You got to have that kind of that check and balance kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. You do, and that keeps your research – legit, you know, it keeps it good, and it keeps you on track, and it keeps you grounded. You know, you have to have somebody who's going to question things, you know, in order to keep it real, I guess.
Right. Now you're also part of the Texas Bigfoot Research Center.
Yeah, Conservancy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what does, because I've heard of it, but I've never really known what they do. Is that where they collect all the data from different people sending stuff to them and kind of go over the stuff, or what does that entail?
TBRC is a group that has been around since 99, I believe, is when it was originally formed, with Craig Wilheater and another gentleman. And I joined the group initially in 2002. And we reformed, we regrouped as a 501c3 scientific research center. So we are a nonprofit in 2007, I believe. And what we do is we have research areas, just like most Bigfoot research groups. And we are trying to prove as scientifically as possible that these creatures exist. We don't really, I mean, of course we want to hear witnesses' accounts. We love getting those in, and without, you know, witness accounts, you really don't know necessarily where to go to look, right?
Right.
So that's a very important part of any Bigfoot research group is witnesses sharing their stories with us. So we know where to go, and we keep it all under our hat. You know, if you don't want your name out there, we certainly won't post it out there. We'll, you know, give you an assumed name or John Doe, if you don't want it shared on our website, we won't do that. But we're pretty much the same as any other Bigfoot group. We're just out there trying to prove that they exist and
right.
You know, get the mystery solved.
Exactly. Yeah, and you made a good point with witness accounts to help narrow it down, because there's so much miles of woods, areas that
mm-hmm.
if you don't have accounts, you really can't plot them on a map and kind of find a generalized area where there's a lot of sightings.
Exactly. You've heard the term a needle in a haystack, right? Well,
yeah.
My friend Craig Woolheater actually said, we're not looking for a needle in a haystack. We're looking for a moving needle in a field of hay. So,
pretty much.
That puts it into perspective.
Right. Now, how when you got into Bigfoot research, how tough is it for, women to get, you get a lot of flack from folks, when they say, what do you do? And you're like, oh, I'm a Bigfoot researcher. And they kind of look at you like, what?
I think men or woman, I think regardless of your sex, you get the, sideways look if you tell somebody what you're doing.
Yeah, that's true, too, because we still get it in. I was just going to say, we still get it saying that we investigate ghosts, even though
really?
There's... Yeah.
Oh,
You get that occasional, what are your hobbies? And you're like, oh, I'm a paranormal investigator. And they're kind of like, okay, And, of course, you get the other ones that go, really? Well, I got a story for you,
Yeah. Well, we get that, too. You either get the, she looks for Bigfoot, or you get somebody going, oh, man, that's cool. My cousin was out hunting back in, blah, 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 and then you get a story out of it. It's the same thing. But I would imagine that paranormal research, you don't get quite the look that we get. I think ghosts are probably a little bit more widely accepted as opposed to Bigfoot. In my opinion, from what I've noticed.
Yeah. Now, being involved in that, and of course I know being a mother and having a family, you probably don't get in the field as often as you want, if not at all. But when you guys go out, because I try to make our listeners understand that, even though there are Bigfoot shows on television, that it is a television show. So, they have meetings and they kind of get viewers. But the real folks, and I'm not saying they're not real that are on the shows, but the folks that are not on television that are going out and doing research, it seems like they do things a little bit differently. Everybody has their own style. Now, when you guys go out, do you stay in a, camp out and try to do things to attract a Bigfoot to you, or do you go, walking around trying to track them?
It really depends on the area and the types of sightings that we've had. Over the years, I've really tried just about every type of research, because who's to say one's better than the other? Nobody's nabbed one yet, right? So you can't say my method's better than yours. So I think you really need to keep open open-minded about your methods of research. Unless you do something that you get a lot of good results from. You do call blasting and you get a lot of calls in return in a particular area, then that's obviously what you need to be doing in that area. What I like to do is find an area based on sightings, see what the, what was the witness doing when they had the sighting? Were they just walking down the road? Was it something they were doing specifically that maybe the creature, caught their attention? Like, were they playing in the water near a river? Were they kids there making a lot of noise? There's a lot of variables that you have to consider.
Mm-hmm.
But an example of what I've done is when I was up in Skookum Meadows with a group of people, we would have one group stationed on a ridgeline above a valley, and they would do, you know, what we call blasting, where you, you know, vocalize out, broadcast vocalizations out across the valley. And on a map, we would have teams stationed in areas we felt were, you know, a good possibility for these creatures to be. You know, you're near water, you're near a food source. And we'd have one team sit still, and we'd have one team kind of walking around between the two sites and see what we can get as far as evidence. And we'd communicate via radio, you know, oh, I think I heard something over here and heard something over there. I mean, that's a good method to just start out with, I think.
Right.
Nice. Do you guys ever get responses back when y'all do like call blasting?
I have in the past, yeah. And the funny thing is that with call blasting, you don't know what you're saying. You know, you could be screaming get out of here, you could be screaming come get dinner. You don't know what you're saying.
Nice.
You know, so I think that the best response that I've had is I've had good responses with the Ohio Howl that's been
mm-hmm.
cleaned up. And then I've also had good responses from one that's actually not really a legitimate call. We called it Lightning Creek. I don't know the actual name of the audio that was put out, but it was made by a guy in New York, and he put it out, you know, to try to fool everybody and, oh, see what I can do, tell everybody it's a Bigfoot call. But, you know, we know it's not. He eventually admitted it wasn't. But we still use it anyway from time to time because, you know, I've gotten some responses using that, which is really interesting.
Oh.
Yeah. So I do like call blasting. I like being in the woods and, you know, having this call go out. And, you know, when you get a response, it's an amazing feeling. It really is.
I can only imagine. I mean, that's the one time that you would feel like, you know, smaller than the universe, you know, because we kind of take for granted that we're kind of top of the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, how do you feel when you're not really necessarily not top of the food chain?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, when you're alone in the woods, you realize real fast how
yeah,
not on
yeah.
top of the food chain you are.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in bear country. Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine. I interviewed him on another show that I do, and he's here in Texas, and he's in the Conroe, Houston, Texas area, and they have a specific place that they go and do research, a lot of sightings there. And my co-host, she was like, she's in St. Louis, Missouri. And so she's not real familiar with what's down here in Texas. And we were talking about, you know, he was talking about, you know, she asked him, what, you know, if you're going to do Bigfoot hunting, what should you carry with you? You know, and he's like, well, I have a knife that I carry on me. And we
yeah.
also have some pistols and some rifles. And she's like, well, why would you have those? And then I stopped her. I said, because there are a lot of hogs down here.
Yeah. Yes, there are.
And if you're out in the woods, the hogs, a lot of times, they're a little bit more scary than a Bigfoot because they come charging at you.
Well, they're not as shy as Bigfoot, I'll tell you that.
No, they are not.
Yeah, they'll chase you right up a tree faster than a Bigfoot will.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hogs are definitely something you have to be aware of down here. And depending on where you are in East Texas, Louisiana, especially up in Oklahoma from what I've seen, you also have to be at least aware that there are bears here. You know, they've never really been a nuisance, but there are bears in Oklahoma. I can vouch for that.
Yeah, black bears.
Yeah, and they're not scarce.
Now, have you guys noticed, you know, I've heard this many a time, that Bigfoot has a tendency to mimic other animal calls?
You know, I have heard that, and you know, I don't know what makes people think that they're mimicking. You know, maybe you've got a brain damaged owl out there. Maybe it's a sick owl, and you know, I heard weird things. It sounds kind of like an owl, but it kind of doesn't, or it sounds kind of like a coyote, but I hadn't heard that before. Here's my thing. Have you heard every single sound that every single owl or every single coyote has ever made? No.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure you probably haven't.
Nope.
And so have you seen a Bigfoot open its mouth and mimic a coyote? No, probably. Great. But I haven't. So, you know, is it possible? Sure, it's possible. Anything's possible. But, you know, I'm not going to say it's unlikely. I mean, it's likely. They could do that. You know, maybe it's a way to try to throw people off. Maybe it's a communication method for them. So, you know, it's to not draw too much attention to themselves. You know, oh, if we make the coyote sound, that means there's people nearby, you know. It could definitely mean that. But, you know, I'm on the fence with that one. Like I said, you know, have you ever seen one have you ever seen one make that noise?
Right.
You know that's not a sickly coyote.
That's a good point.
Or a sickly owl.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, and
it's not like an easy
you know, I got to stop watching some of these shows because this weekend I went camping and I was, you know, and it was the traditional camping tent, the whole nine yards, no RV, none of that. And we were by a tree line. We're out in this open field, but we were kind of close to a tree line. And we had a big barrel, you know, trash can full of trash. And earlier in the night, because we had found huge-ass raccoon footprints up on top of one of the tables we had out the night before.
Uh-huh. Sure they appreciated that trash.
No, but nobody it didn't do anything, didn't move anything the night before. I think it was just scouting, right?
Yeah.
Because we didn't have a lot of trash that first night. But the second night, you know, the trash barrel was full of stuff, right? And I looked at one of the people and I said, hey, somebody, we either need to secure that trash, cover it up, put something across that top of that barrel, weight it down, whatever we need to do, because I think we're going to have visitors again. And no one did it. So then we went to bed, right? And then I hear a big old pack of coyotes out in the distance howling or whatnot. And then I hear something walking out in the woods behind our tents, you know, and then my mind starts racing because of watching the shows, you know, and they're talking, oh, there's coyotes, you know, something stirred them up. It could be a Bigfoot, you know. So I have that kind of in the back of my head. Not necessary, but you know, you never know. I'm a paranormal investigator, so my options are wide open on what can be out there. And,
sure.
So I just kept laying in my tent, and then I hear like some pots and pans moving, you know, this kind of thing. And I thought somebody had walked over to where all the stuff is underneath this awning and was getting something to drink or eat or whatever. So I just continued to sit there. And then I hear, like, a can get thrown, you know. And I was like, what is going on out there? So I kind of eased over and unzipped my tent. And I turned on my flashlight, and the trash can's probably 20 feet from my tent. And I shined it right at that trash can and saw two eyes. And I kept looking, and it was a huge raccoon on top of that trash can digging in the trash. You know? So I had to chase off some raccoons last night, but... Yeah, you just you start watching these shows and being open-minded like we are in the field. You're just sitting there going, okay, what's going on out in these woods?
Well, at least I got out and looked.
I did.
I've been out with people who wouldn't get out of the damn tent, and they call themselves researchers. So, at least you got out.
I'd have been off in the car, hauling ass out of there. Not gonna lie.
Was it Coonzilla?
Me and nature are not good friends.
Oh, man.
But that's a good thing. You know, at least you're aware of your surroundings while you're out there. You listened, right? And you investigated. But at least it's in your mind, and your mind is open to it, right? Maybe, you know, of course, now we know it was, with that big pile of trash, you could have guaranteed you it was a raccoon or a possum or something.
Well, I called it earlier in the night, but, you know, when the events started happening and it's pitch dark and you're in a tent and you hear something moving out in the woods and you hear claims of Bigfoot coming into camp and this, that, and other, or messing with somebody's tent, that's always in the back of your mind, you know?
Oh, hell, I know. Imagine being in the woods alone and you hear something walking around behind you and you've got all kinds of stuff going through your head. I've got all kinds of stories in my head. You know, I'm not just limited to Bigfoot. I've got all kinds of stuff up in there. It's hard to keep your cool in situations like that.
Right.
Not gonna lie, I'll probably be inside a tent making my final video, like in Blair Witch, crying and stuff.
Up the nose shot.
Yeah.
There's something out there.
Right.
I can hear it.
Situation like that, grab my back pocket. You'll be the second one out.
Nice.
I'll tell you, the first time I went up to Skookum, I was so scared of bears. Terrified of bears. I'm still not entirely comfortable with the thought of bears, but I was particularly scared of bears on that trip. And I slept with my K-bar under my pillow. And I told my friend who was with me, I said, listen, I said, if I hear something sniffing around the base of the tent, I said, I'm stabbing first and I'm asking who it is later. And if it really starts making noise, I'm cutting our exit out of the other side of the tent. So you just follow me. We're going. You're going to bother your zipper. Just cut your way out.
When I was a kid, I was in Boy Scouts, and I remember our big camping trip one year. We went to Pueblo, Colorado, and we camped out in the, you know, mountain up there, and there were grizzlies. You know, we never saw them, but we sure heard them at night.
Where is it?
Pueblo, Colorado.
And they're, okay, well, when were you in Pueblo, Colorado where there were grizzlies there?
Well, they told us there were grizzlies. This was back in 1987.
Oh, you know, you were probably near, like, the ghost grizzly. The last place they killed a grizzly in the lower 48 was near the town of Platoro. We actually went and did some investigation one year up in there.
Mm-hmm.
In the San Juan Wilderness area. And that was the last known grizzly kill in the southern portion of the southern U.S.
Mm-hmm.
A long time. Now, they could be up in there, but there haven't been any sightings since that bear was killed. And that bear was killed in the late 70s. I can't remember the year exactly, but it was killed in the late 70s. And
right.
It's stuffed and in the town of Platoro. But I wouldn't be as concerned about grizzlies. And I'd be more concerned about large black bears up in there. Because there is a lot. We found a lot of evidence of black bears
mm-hmm.
when we were researching Bigfoot. You know, we've become bear experts from research.
Right.
But grizzlies wouldn't be too much of a concern. Now, yeah, if I were going up, like, into Montana
mm-hmm.
and northern Idaho, where, you know, there's a lot of, you know, footage of grizzlies roaming the countryside. Yeah, those would scare the heck right out of me. I don't know that I'd necessarily want to go on an extended investigation out in grizzly country.
Well, we just heard the bears. We didn't, you know, we heard of, you know, at night, you know, growling or it was some kind of weird howl. Of course, this was, you know, 26 years ago, so it's hard for me to describe what it was. But I just remember we asked the camp counselor or whatever it was, what that was, and he said, yeah, there's bears out there.
Yeah, oh yeah. So, and they'll make some weird noises. I've heard some strange bear noises
mm-hmm.
coming out of the Cascades.
Needless to say, I didn't see the campsite too much.
Yeah, well, you know what runs through my mind, because I love horror movies. Anytime I hear weird bear sounds, I think of the movie Prophecy. Remember that with the mutated bear?
Yep.
Goes on a killing
rampage
up in Maine. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That runs through my head. That's fun. Fun time.
Right.
You're out in the woods and horror movies start going through your head.
Being out in the field, have you besides calls being, you know, called, you get callbacks on your calls, have you experienced any other strange things that have happened that could have possibly been a Bigfoot? Maybe a, have you come across footprints or any of that?
Sure. You know, and I've cast a lot of tracks. I'll call them tracks. It's nothing definitive.
Right.
There, you know, a good clear track is very hard to come by. You know, you see a lot of you know, ooh, I've got this cast and that cast, and I did this and that. A good clear footprint is not an easy thing to find. But you know, looking back over the years, not necessarily while I was conducting research formally, but growing up, what sticks in my mind when people ask me that question is growing up, like I said earlier, I would spend my summers in southwestern Oregon on my uncle's property, and it was in a, you know, a fairly remote valley. And there were a lot of things that took place, you know, over the summers as a child that at the time, you know, I don't think much of it. But now that I'm a researcher and I'm as involved in this as I am, I can look back on those incidents and I can say, you know, that sounds a little, you know, it seems a lot like, you know, might have been a Bigfoot, you know, in the area. There, you know, I remember we were in the woods, and it's, you know, southwestern Oregon. It's very heavily wooded. And it was really remote where we were. And anytime you go in the woods, you had that feeling that you were being watched. I never felt like I was alone, no matter where I was on the property or up on the mountain or down in the creek. So I always felt like there was somebody watching me. You never felt alone. And there was an incident where a lot of us kids were out near a tree line, right? It was a big pasture, literally the South 40 from this ranch of my cousin's friend. And we were playing on a wood pile. They were splitting wood for the winter. And there was a large wood pile, and we were back there. It was near the tree line. We were having fun giggling. We were, you know, climbing up on top of the wood pile and sliding down, and we thought that was a great thing. So we're giggling. There's probably five or six of us all together. And I remember I was on top of the wood pile, and we heard something kind of stomping. You could hear something kind of walking towards us in the woods, but it was pretty thick, and you couldn't really see. There was a lot of pine trees that were young, so they were very bushy, obstructing a lot of the view. But something came up, and it was to my back. And then it growled, and the trees started shaking, like something had grabbed the trees and was shaking it. And my cousins are, bear, 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 and, you know, everybody takes off running, and I fell off the wood pile, and I injured my foot. I couldn't run as fast as the other kids. And I remember thinking the whole time we were running towards the house, the farmhouse, I was thinking, this thing's going to jump on me, I'm dead, this thing's going to get me. And I was afraid to look back. I was terrified to look back. But now that I think about it, as a Bigfoot researcher, there are a lot of accounts where these things seem to be attracted to the sound of children playing. And we were making a lot of noise and laughing and giggling. And bears don't have thumbs to grab trees and shake them. You know, bears won't shake trees. And the trees were definitely shaking. And I think, looking back, that it's possible that it could have been a Bigfoot that was attracted to the sound of us playing. And it might have been a territorial thing where it was, you know, it was kind of that noise. And the trees were shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that if it were a bear, yeah, I was a pretty easy target. And when you're not supposed to run from predatory animals like bears, and we definitely did run, you know, it had every opportunity to definitely take me down, and there was nothing chasing me. So,
right.
You know, looking at stories like that, there were things like that happened
mm-hmm.
all along those summers that are, you know, strange things that have happened to me. I can think back on and think, you know, that probably was a Bigfoot.
Right. What do the researchers think the reason behind the sound of children would attract Bigfoot?
You know, I can't tell you what that is, you know, other than curiosity.
Yep.
You know, it's a sound that they probably don't hear terribly often. you know, and it, what encounters with people they do have, depending on how deep you are in the woods, it's just hunters. You know, you hear men cussing and talking and drinking and farting and doing whatever they do around campfires. And they don't necessarily hear, you know, high-pitched kids screaming. It's not a bad sound. You know, you listen to kids playing in the distance. It's an inviting sound. It's not a bad thing.
Maybe they don't feel as threatened if they hear, you know, they kind of maybe they have that distinction. Like you said, they're used to the grown men being out in the field, and they know what those sounds are compared to, you know, children, which they probably don't hear, like you said, very often.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that also think that women, you know, women out in the field, it might attract them because, you know, our voices tend to be higher. It's a softer sound. It's not as aggressive. Plus, maybe, you know, we're putting off pheromones that might be attracted. I don't know. But there's a lot of people out there that think that women are also an attractant. You know, they'll come in for a closer look. What is that, you know, out of curiosity?
Right. What about baiting, setting out bait? What do you think about that? Have y'all done that, or have you?
I have done
that.
I have done that, and I don't put a lot of stock in that. I'll leave baiting to the habituators. You know, you can give them their smorgasbord that can do that. The only thing that I have had happen personally with baiting is deer and elk coming up and saying, "Well, thank you very much, lady. That was awfully kind of you. We really appreciate that."
Still hungry.
I would think, you know, I would think putting out bait, then you're just kind of putting yourself in a little bit more danger because now you're baiting in all kinds of wildlife.
Exactly. And how do you know what brings them in? I mean, sure, they might be curious, but you have to be guaranteed there's one in the area. You know, it's the habituators tend to be the ones who bait a little bit more. And, you know, we know they're in the area. They're living in my backyard, so I put out, you know, 4 apples and a hot dog every Thursday. You know, that kind of thing. And I just haven't had, I'm not going to say it's a terrible idea. I don't put a lot of stock into it. I haven't had any results from it personally. And, you know, you're also, you don't know what this thing's diet consists of. I mean, if it's living in the woods, right, existing off pine cones and berries and, you know, the occasional rabbit or whatever, you know, that pile of banana is going to be really attractive to. Does he even know what a banana is? Does he know what that peanut butter sandwich is? You know, sure, it might be curious. You know, and it might be an interesting smell. You also have to consider, are you giving it something that might upset its digestive system? You know, not all animals, not all food is okay to give to all animals, too.
Yeah, I could just hear one Bigfoot telling another one, "Hey, man, don't go over there and eat that burrito. I got bad indigestion."
Man. That's probably what it was.
I
don't even know what they'd like in that, too. Taco Bell is no bueno for Bigfoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
But I'm trying to think what else. What about tree knocking? You know, this is something I've seen on television, but I always ask that to people that are actually, you know, that I talk to out in the field. Do you guys do tree knocking? Because it's so hard to really say that you're getting something legitimate unless you're doing it in some kind of pattern and that pattern is repeated.
Yeah, see, I've had experiences with tree knocking. I've had it happen. I've done tree knocking myself. I don't have a lot of faith in tree knocking because I think, you know, it could be a lot of things. You know, unless you're in a really, really, really remote area and you hear that noise, you know, that would be interesting to me. And if you're in an area where you know there aren't other researchers, that would be of interest to me if you're doing tree knocking and you're getting a response. If you're in an area like Skooka Meadows, I'll give you an example, which is very popular with Bigfoot researchers because the Skookum cast was pulled out of there and it's a pretty big thing with a lot of researchers, so they want to go there. It's like the motherland for some people, you know, like Willow Creek. And I was there with a group of people, and we heard, lo and behold, tree knocking coming from the valley across from us. And we were like, hey. And it was in the middle of the afternoon, which was really odd. And we were like, well, you know, got to give it a whirl. We're here to research. So we start tree knocking in response, and it would knock, and we would knock, and we would knock, and it would knock. We'd knock twice, and it would knock twice. And we're like, hey, that's pretty cool. Well, here it comes. We switched it up, right? We switched up. Instead of going knock, 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 we did knock, knock, and we waited and then knocked again. You know, kind of switched the cadence up a little bit. And it stopped. Stopped. Didn't get another thing. Now, I think that if it were some form of communication, maybe it would have kept on mimicking us. But I think that it was probably another Bigfoot researcher. And both parties were like, aha. Which is something that you have to take into consideration if you're researching out in the wild. So,
oh, man,
you know,
how horrible would that be? I'll say, how horrible would that be? Somebody's like, oh, I think I'm getting responses. And then the person on the other side of the knocking is saying the exact same thing, you know?
I know, right? Two different YouTube videos pop up. Taking the same day in the same area.
Yeah.
That's something that researchers really need to be aware of. You know, if you're researching in public and it's a place that's pretty well known with other researchers, you need to be aware of that kind of thing. Because it can happen, and I believe that in that instance it did.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the Rick Jacobs pictures?
The Jacobs photos. I think it's a bear with mange.
That's okay.
I took a look at it and I thought the exact
same thing.
Yeah. And I'll get people that will argue with me. I have a friend who's on a TV show who would, if he heard me say that, would argue vigorously with me that it is not a bear, it is a Bigfoot.
Well, there are three pictures, and the first one is clearly a bear.
You know, and I will say that the first picture I saw, because I didn't see them in any particular order, I just saw one. It was intriguing, the first one, and then you see the other pictures, you're like, oh, yeah, that's a bear.
Yeah.
You know, and it is, and it's shocking to see bears with mange where their hair is completely gone. But if you Google mm-hmm. that, you'll see a very similar image pop up to the Jacobs photo.
Interesting.
So. That's my opinion, is it's a bear.
That's what I thought as well. Now, if you see a picture of Kevin, you might also think that that's a bear with mange.
Now, I've been nice to you. You should be the same to me.
You weren't nice to me earlier. You called me a dumbass for not knowing what a Casio buffet was.
No, it was Casino. I mistext you. Sorry.
What buffet is?
Casino. My mom, my brother had a buy one, get one free buffet at the Horseshoe Casino. And since it's Mother's Day, Mom didn't want to cook. You know, it's her day. So
yeah.
She wanted to go eat buffet. So.
Cool.
I was telling him that I was headed to Shreveport and hopefully I'll be back in time for the start of the show. And I typed Casio instead of Casino.
I got that text. I thought that Casio Watch Company had started into the restaurant business. I was like, what the hell are they going to serve? Like all digital plates or something?
Nice.
You know, and... after, talking about the tree knocking and other researchers in the area, that makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. One of my guests called in from a remote area that him and his team had been camping out, you know, and so he did a radio interview from the woods. And he told me off air prior to the show, you know, I'm going to call in live from the field, but we're not going to say, you know, the location.
Sure.
Because I don't want a lot of people knowing about it and getting flooded. So that makes a lot of sense because he's trying to do the best he can to control that area so that they can try to really get some, you know, valid evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense of why that why he did that.
Yeah, and yeah, a lot of research groups have their little, you know, secret squirrel hiding places and research areas. And, you know, it's for the legitimacy of the research and for their own protection. I don't know that it's necessarily because, you know, they don't want to share anything with, you know, the outside world. It's to, you know, keep it legit, keep it, you know, complete, the research areas. If you advertise, you know, oh, I'm going out here this weekend, you know, every jerk on the internet could show up for all you know, and then you've got a lot of people think that it's really cute to try to hope. A lot of people think it's cute to try to hope.
Yeah.
We had that happen to us at a conference last year. And we had four locations that we were investigating that night with the public, and we were standing outside of this 1800 hotel, and we were getting ready to go to the next location, and some of the people that were in my group from the public glanced over at a house across the street in the second floor window, and they kept seeing this shadow figure type. Well, it wasn't a shadow figure because it had form. You could see it. And it would stand in the window and look out, and then it would slowly move away. And then it would do the same thing again repeatedly. And I was like, are you kidding me? These people were over there with like a – because I got closer and I could actually see like a stick or something, a broomstick or something underneath the clothing or whatever they had. And they were doing a little puppeteering up there, you know, trying to scare people.
That's nice. Yeah. See, in every field of research, there's somebody out there who thinks it's an awfully cute idea to try to hoax everybody because that's funny.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So what do you got? I know we're getting close to time for you to get off of here. So what do you got? You got anything coming up or throw out any websites or anything if anybody wants to contact you with their stories or whatever
you
would like?
If anybody has any stories and they'd like to contact me, you can reach me through Twitter. My account is wide open, so you can get me there. My username is Monica_Rawlins, R-A-W-L-I-N-S, and I'm open to all kinds of stories. I mean, if you want to share it with me, that's great. If you want me to come out and investigate something that's going on your property, we can certainly have that arranged. And also, my friend Sharon Lee and I are doing something called Bigfoot Adventure Weekends in Ohio next month. And what that is a weekend opportunity for people to come out to Salt Fork State Park with us. And what we do is teach you our methods of research. So a lot of people are seeing Finding Bigfoot on TV, and they want to go out and do the research, you know, or they want to go see what it's about, get out there. What we try to do is arm you and educate you so you're not just stumbling around out in the woods because you can't actually... You know, if you find a footprint, how do you cast it? Or, you know, you want to try to start forming your own little group, we'll try to help you along in that direction on how to interview witnesses and how to set up game cameras and all of that. And it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, starting June 13th. And it's $100 for the weekend. It includes your food. It's breakfast, lunch, and dinner for dinner Thursday, Friday and Saturday, and then breakfast on Sunday. And we plan on having a good time. We'll take you out. We'll teach you how to research. We'll teach you how to cast, how to vocalize, how to do all that fun stuff. So we encourage everybody to check it out. It's www.bigfootadventureweekends.com.
Nice. Dang, I need to drive to Ohio.
You know, if you consider it, it's really not a bad deal. I mean, it's $100 and your campsite and all your food for the weekend's included. So all you have to do is, yeah, bring your snacks. So.
You know, Jeff, I actually, the friend I was talking about earlier, he's going to be speaking at our conference, but he's also going to take Unknown Paranormal on a Bigfoot weekend with his team.
That's
oh, cool.
Awesome.
So, because I've been dying to go out and just learn, you know, what people in the Bigfoot community, what they do. I just want to know that because you never know, somebody might have something going on, and I just want to be aware, you know, of how to interview them and everything else so that, you know, I can get connected to the right people or help them investigate or whatever it may be, you know. It's funny, paranormal community wants to always go on Bigfoot hunts, but a lot of the Bigfoot hunters want to go on paranormal investigations.
That's true. And I was going to say, you know, I would be happy to take, you know, any paranormal group out on a Bigfoot thing here in Texas if you want to do it. You know, I am wide open. I love sharing my knowledge with people. I really love teaching it and, you know, having people that are interested learn. It's very rewarding for me. And I also used to have a paranormal group also that kind of went to the wayside as my involvement with Bigfoot got stronger and stronger. But, you know, I
right.
would also, you know, there's the thing. I like paranormal too. So you're right. You know, Bigfoot researchers want to do paranormal too. So yeah, anybody
like,
who wants to come out with me, just give me a ring or drop me a line on Twitter or Facebook, even if you can find me, because my profile is private for good reason. Twitter's the best way to contact me. Drop me a line on Twitter, and I would be more than happy to arrange for a Bigfoot weekend for anybody who's interested.
There you go, Martin.
I know. I want to go squatching so bad.
I will
Martin's actually in Dallas.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I'm in the Dallas area.
That's awesome. Well, you're my neighbor then. We can go on out. I could take you up to Oklahoma then. I've got a good place, yeah, that I've been wanting to scout out. And I'm taking a bunch of people up in Oklahoma, so you can come right along.
Yeah, I actually live, I live in McKinney, so it's like 30 miles north of Dallas.
Yeah, I know where McKinney. I live by White Rock Lake, so I'm in
East Dallas. Yeah, that's not too far from me.
Yeah, that's cool, and actually a lot of my friends live up in McKinney, up in that area, Frisco, so...
Oh, cool.
So in that direction anyway, I'll just pick you up. Oklahoma.
There you go.
Well, Monica, thanks so much for coming on today. I know it's Mother's Day and all, but I'm so glad that you took time to come on and talk with us for a little bit.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Well, enjoy the rest of Mother's Day and have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
Awesome.
Bye. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's take a little bit of a break. In honor of Mother's Day, this is Pantera, Cowboys from Hell.
Oh, hell yeah.
We won't make something, no, don't fail, we're gone.
You're listening to the Unknown Radio Network at www.blogtalkradio.com/unknownPG. You are in.
Welcome back, everybody.
Oh, man. I could never get tired of that song. That was a good choice.
Love it. So where'd Kevin go?
I am here.
Oh, there he is. Okay.
That was Monica Rollins for everybody, Bigfoot researcher here in the big state of Texas. So I'm glad she came on the show tonight. For the remainder of the show, it is us three, Jeff, Martin, and myself, Kevin. Just shooting the bull. If you want to call in, the number is 323-580-5703. So the phone lines are open. And we can talk about anything, Bigfoot, paranormal, you name it. Jeff not being the sex symbol, you know.
No, that's never stopped.
Oh, I know what I was going to tell you guys. I don't know if you saw the post in the Unknown Radio Network group page. God, where's my calendar? I'm going to have to find it now. Next month, I believe it's June 25th. It's a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Terrify Radio is on Tuesday. Well, that is the birthday of not only Terrify Radio, which will be 1 year old,
mm-hmm.
that is also the actual birth date for Unknown Radio Network, because
oh.
I created the Unknown Radio Network, of course, when I added the second show, Terrify Radio. So we got two birthdays in one, so that night I have requested if any host is available from the other shows to call in, because it's going to be the Unknown Radio Network and Terrify's birthday, so we're going to have a shindig online.
Nice.
And that's going to be on that Tuesday?
That is, yes, 25th.
Okay. Or that's going to be in June?
June 25th, so if you guys are available on that Tuesday night and want to call in and laugh your butts off, because we got a lot of crazy hosts on this network, and usually, I mean, even Martin knows, he was on the End of the World segment for a little bit when he prank called us, but it was nonstop laughing for 2 hours, and I'm going to see if we can get some of our friends that we've had as guests on the show to maybe call in for a few minutes, you know, just to kind of have some guest appearances, call in with everybody.
Cool.
So that's what we're doing.
That's during the summertime, so I should be available.
Yeah. It'll be a good time, and you missed the End of the World one last time, Jeff, so, yeah, you need to call in.
Oh, no,
yeah.
I called in for a little bit before.
Well, a little bit doesn't count. I need 2 hours of your time.
I was there. I even made the intro for that night.
Yeah, it's in your contract.
I'll contract my ass.
Oh, man.
And Martin, no prank calling.
Yeah,
no,
that was so funny. Oh, man.
Martin, you don't listen to Kevin. You prank call anybody you want.
That was so funny, because they were talking about, they're like, you know, what? There's no black ghost hunter groups. And then when I heard that, I was like, oh, no, I'm calling in. There's no way I can let this go. So I called in and pretended like I had a black ghost hunting group.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that. That sounds hilarious.
And for a split second, he had me fooled. when I screen the call. Because I was like, oh, God. You know, I have all these radio show hosts on, right? Work all on air at the same time. And as soon as they talk about this, I get this phone call, and he had, you know, he had me believing that this was going on, and I'm like, oh, this is going to get bad on air.
When I called in, I was like, this John Turner, I'm calling about the Black Ghost Hunters.
Yeah.
Kevin's like, all right, I'll put you on, no problem.
Yeah, so.
I'm going to have to clip that out.
Oh, God. Yeah, you got to listen to it, because I had everybody going for about a good 2-3 minutes. I think it was until they asked what my ghost hunting, my team name was, and I was trying to think fast, so I said Black Cross Paranormal, and then they're like, oh, snap, that's Riley Black's team, and then I couldn't hold in the laughter any further.
Nice.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Yeah, some good times, man, good times. Yeah, so. Oh, now I remember, because I said this earlier in the show, this is before Martin called you, that I had this conversation with my folks tonight, right? We had some goofy conversations in the car going into the boats in Shreveport, right? But we didn't go to gamble, don't do that. We just went to eat the buffet,
mm-hmm.
which the buffet is pretty damn good over there. You know, and I get my plate, and I got, like, crab legs, got me a little bit of lamb, some tilapia. I was getting stuff that, to me, if you're going to pay $25, because it's expensive, $25 for all-you-can-eat buffet, I'm going to get the most expensive shit there is. that I can't afford to buy on a weekly basis at the grocery store. And I'm going to eat the shit out of them. So I was eating all that stuff. Mom's like, what is that? I said, these are crabs, you know, crab claws. And I'm sitting there cracking them and all that, you know. And that's what I told Mom. I said, well, I'm not going to get green beans or mashed potatoes or any of that. I'm not at the store, you know. So on the way back, they're building another casino, right? Like, Shreveport needs another casino. they don't have enough already. They're building another brand new one on behind the horseshoe over by Bass Pro Shop. And we're going across the bridge, and I look, because if you're not from this area or know Shreveport, Louisiana, we call them the boats because they have the hotels that are sit on the land, but the actual casinos are in these boats, right, or replicas of old steam boats, and they sit on the river. So everybody in this area, we always say, hey, let's go to the boats, you know. Well, we're going across that bridge, and I look over where that hotel's being built, and I say, Dad, where's the boat? Oh, they passed a new deal where you don't have to have the casino on the river, right? You can have it on land. And I said, well, that ain't going to work. That is not going to work around here. It's not going to fly. Because we say, we're going to the boats. If you don't have a boat, I ain't going. Because if you have it on land, then the smoking ordinance comes into effect. Because on the boats, people smoke, right? And there's a lot of people, when they drink, they smoke, and vice versa, whatever. Well, if it's not on the river and you got no smoking, which would be good for some people. I'm not saying that. You know, there are people that don't want to go into a place and get blasted by cigarette smoke, right? But terminology-wise, I don't, you know, especially over here in East Texas, we're not going to go, hey, I'm going to the casino tonight. No, we say we're going to the boats. You just messed up all of our terminology by not having a boat.
Well, you know, the Tropicana over there, that, I mean, that's not on a boat. That's always been on land. That's been there for about 10 years now.
Yeah, but it's not as well known as the Horseshoe or some of these other places that actually have a boat. Hello?
Well, it is now.
Hey, I have a question for y'all. The here recently they opened up applications for a one-way trip to Mars. Would you do it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff doesn't have to take applications. He has Mars on the backside of him.
No.
Oh, man.
I signed up. There'll be a petition of people willing to pay to get me on that.
We'll say this for everybody listening. Jeff is taking applications for men on his Mars.
Nice.
Of course, if I was able to get on this trip, you know, on the spaceship on the way up there, I'd make sure there'd be like Twitter or something or Facebook, and every time I took a dump, I'd just say, I just shit on Earth.
Nice, nice. Now, I'm going to submit my application this week because they're expecting, they're only going to take 40 people. So far,
yep.
78,000 people have applied, right?
Yep.
So I've got to be better than 78,000 people, you know. So my whole ploy to it is because you have to make a little video, you know. You know, so I'm going to make this video. I'm going to be like, I want to go to Mars. Like, I am actually going to make history by going to Mars, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know what happens to fat people when they go into space? No? Well, pick me, and we will both know together.
Nice.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm so going to make that video. And they need photographers, so it's going to be another bonus.
This is true.
Yeah, but are you going to take Stacy with you?
Heck no, man. It's going to be a long-distance relationship.
Long-distance relationship that will never be, you know, reconvened.
But yeah, that was
I was just going to say you never know, though, because technology... Somebody else would go, well, hey, we got people up there now. Let's just start shuttling a bunch of people up there.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's things about it that kind of scare me. Like the one-way trip, you know, you ever get tired of it, there's no way to come back home, right? And then the other thing is what if for some odd reason this company that's like, you know, they're funding this project and, you know, you're at Mars, you're having a good time, things are going great. All of a sudden, this company goes bankrupt, right? What the F happens? Because obviously there's no oxygen on Mars. So they're going to have to find a way to supply oxygen. Well, there is oxygen, but not like here, you know?
Not very much, so, yeah.
So they'll have to find a way to supply you with oxygen and living environment. Now, when there's no money for that, you know, this company goes bankrupt, what happens? I mean, that's pretty much just a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no food. You have to wait on food to show up every couple of years. So, yeah, I can only imagine that going horribly wrong very quickly.
Unless what they're doing is with the funds that they get prior to launch, they send you with all the necessary things for you to regenerate oxygen, you know, if they can find to keep plants alive in a dome-type facility, inflatable, whatever it might be, you know, greenhouse, and, you know, because they need CO2 to survive, and you need oxygen. But they would have to come up with ways where y'all were self-sustaining. You know, self-sustaining without having to worry about supplies.
Yeah, I have a feeling that the first group that goes, they're going to be terraforming, trying to, you know, populate Mars with plants and animals and stuff like that. Well, maybe not animals, but you know what I mean. Now, the only other thing is, gravity, I think, is one-third gravity. So, you know, a 200-pound guy, I think it's two-thirds gravity. 200-pound guy would weigh, like, 150 on Mars. So that's pretty cool. But man, I don't know. Like, I think from what I read, they're going to turn it into, like, worldwide, oh, man, what is it called? A worldwide reality TV series.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you it's going to be like those people who host that TV show are going to be so stinking rich because you have to, I mean, you have to watch these people grow up for 6 years before they even go to Mars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it's going to be cool, but at the same time, I want to see what the final outcome of this is.
Right. And for anybody, while we're talking about just all kinds of stuff, Monica Rollins called in earlier, and she left us after an hour because she had things to do. It's Mother's Day, of course. So just want to let people know if they just tuned in late, that's why you're not hearing Monica on. So you might have to go listen to the archives to catch the interview. But on top of that, we're talking about Mars. I don't think I would go.
Don't think so.
Because, well, think about it, dude. Now I guess if they're training these 40 people and these 40 people are going to be around each other in the training process, because what would happen if, say, out of the, you know, you're going and say 25 of the people you just absolutely hate, but then you're going to be stuck on Mars with them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one or two things are going to happen. One, it's going to be like boogie nights on Mars, right? Or two, Mars is going to have their very first serial killer that some dude is going to kill like half the people on Mars, and he will never get convicted because he can't. What are they going to do, extradite him?
I just looked at the qualifications, guys. None of us qualify.
How come?
It says the astronauts must be intelligent, creative, psychologically stable, and physically healthy. Those last two don't apply to any of us.
Well, yeah, okay, I agree. I mean, I'm healthy enough to make a trip to Mars, but...
Yeah, none of us here are psychologically stable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talk about paranormal every Sunday, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Right. So... Does that mean, so if it takes 2 years to get there, wonder how long it takes for a transmission from Mars to be received down here at Earth? Because we're gonna have to do some readjustments here so that you can still broadcast with us. Of course, they're gonna have to put a cell phone tower over there. That's just gonna have to happen.
Internet on the spaceship. Just Martin, just Skype in.
Nice.
Yeah. Are you going to be able to deal without the internet and cell phone?
No, I think I can. As long as there's something to do. You know, that's my biggest thing. Is like, I'm a very almost ADD dog that chases cars. Like, you know, the cars there always has to be cars passing, so I always have something to do, always have something to chase, you know. So that's the only problem I have, but no internet, I think I could do without, no Facebook, for sure I could do without. Life would be so much easier with no Facebook, I'm not going to lie.
Okay, here's your one. This will strike a chord with you. What about without your camera?
Yeah, I don't think I'll go.
You wouldn't be able to charge it.
Yeah, I think we would have to figure out. I would make a solar station to where I could run 110 AC inside my house or, you know, camp or whatever it is. If I have to convert my camera to solar, that's what we're going to do.
I'll check this out. You can buy Mars One T-shirts and hoodies.
Nice. Okay, it takes 10 to 20 minutes, depending on how far Mars is from the Earth, because the orbit is elliptical. It takes 10 to 20 minutes to receive radio transmission.
Oh, okay.
And I think they're projecting Virgin Galactic is creating a super turbo spaceship that they're projecting it's only going to take 6 months as opposed to 2 years.
Wow.
But yeah.
Well, where was this crap back in the day when we had the space shuttle program? Come on, guys.
Right? Where was this when I was single?
Now, but think about it, though. You know, here's another thing to think about. Now, you get your camera working, and you take photos, right?
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to open up a gallery just for the people that you live with to see, because you're not going to be able to share them with anybody else.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, it would kind of just – it would almost be pointless unless they had, like, some kind of – unless they had some kind of transient system, because there has to be broadcasts coming from Mars in order for, you know, the reality show to continue. You know what I mean? So they're going to – I'm pretty sure they're going to figure that out. But once they do, there might be, like, internet, but it's probably going to be, like, 56K.
Well, yeah, but if they do the reality show from Mars, you know, like you said, the supplies run out or whatnot, or some weird new bacteria that, you know, the human body can't take, and all of you get sick and die, then I guess the show's canceled after that. It's over.
Yeah.
There's some people that they're going to have – there's people from some professions they're going to have to take, like doctors and, you know, construction, you know, type people, and, you know, some scientists and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But here's something else I bet most people have not thought about. They're going to also have to bring a mortician.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I could do that. I mean, you got a lot of red dirt out there.
Mm-hmm.
And – I mean, it's not – you got to think, though, because it's not so compacted out there, because our ground is so compacted from everything going over it, like, you know, cars, trucks, people walking,
right,
all that kind of stuff. But out there, I mean, you know, with the exception of impacts from meteors, I mean, they don't really see too much. That's the other thing, too, the Kuiper Belt, the meteor belt that separates Mars from Jupiter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll always have to be worried about meteors striking Mars, because it happens all the time.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah, you know, if your spacesuit rips, who's going to fix it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's okay. Somebody's for that.
And okay, and all the Survivor shows that you see on television, like, you know, to make fire and this, that, and other. All the rules of that go out the door, because you're in a different environment, different everything.
Oh, yeah.
So how are they going to teach you survival on a planet that no one has been to in the first place? So all they're doing is basically guessing, well, this should work, or this should work. What if you go there and land and all these things that they think work don't work?
For that type of training, they would have to train them, you know, on, you know, some type of desert here on Earth, because that's the closest we have to a Martian terrain. Now, as far as atmosphere,
but you also got to think, though, you know, the oxygen level is a lot thinner. So, like, starting a fire, I don't think that's going to happen.
Because the atmosphere is completely different.
Fire functions on oxygen. So that's out the door. You know, you're not going to have a striking rock, you know, to spark a fire, because that ain't going to work. So what do you do if you get cold or what? You know, that kind of stuff. It just, because I just went on a camping trip, and there's a lot of crap. And I'm not saying, I mean, yeah, there was stuff that I bought that I didn't need to bring, but there's a lot of stuff to make sure you're you know, supplied, unless you're just going to go hardcore. I got a Rambo knife and some twine, and I'm going to walk out in the woods, right? And
survive.
But, man, that's... they better have a big ass ship, all the crap they're going to have to send.
Yeah.
Because they're getting you know, Jane Doe over here and Tom that are different professions, and yeah, they're going to have to go through some crazy survival techniques and things that they're going to have to do. But like I said, it's still speculation. Yeah, we have a lot of knowledge of Mars by putting the lunar man, you know, the
right
the robots on there and getting scientific readings from there. But you guys know as well as I, that's just like a weatherman. Well, tomorrow it's going to rain and it's going to be this temperature, and then the next day it's hot as balls, the sun's out, no cloud in the sky, right? It's prediction.
Yeah, right. You know,
and they got all the weather tools in the world to monitor the weather, and we can't even predict our own damn weather.
You know, another thing that I was thinking about, how dark does Mars get at night? Because there's no cities out there. You know what I mean?
That would be crazy. It's not a question of how dark it gets at night up there. It's a question of how cold it gets.
That too.
It gets down, like, if I'm not mistaken, like the hottest temperature in the daytime is like, you know, maybe 80 degrees. But at night, it's around, you know, 300 to 400 degrees below zero.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Well, you talk about, you know, the Earth is 93 million miles away from the sun. You know, add about another 10 million, and that's about how far Mars is.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, even the dark, when the moon is on the far side from the sun, you know, the coldest temperature on the moon is like around, you know, 200 below.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's extremely cold, and that's what they're going to have to really take into consideration the most. You know, what's interesting to me is that this Mars One idea is not original. This is pretty much almost the exact same idea somebody came up with when they were planning on going to the moon.
Yeah, I remember hearing about traveling to Mars when I was in grade school, and it was very much a reality when I was in grade school. But they said it was going to take 2 years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, at that time, they didn't know what would happen to the human body and anti-gravity for so long.
Right. Interesting, you know, philosophies. Eckhart, there's only one way to know if studies are true, and that's to actually go there and put people there and let them do things.
Okay.
We need to get somebody on the show to talk about this. That's scientist or astronomer or whatever it might be. Get someone like that and discuss this. Have a whole show about Mars and how we would be able to live on it.
Yeah, that would be cool to talk to somebody that's a part of the project, you know?
Yeah, that would even be better.
Book it. Make it happen.
Nice.
Yeah. Trying to find somebody? Yeah, okay.
Go to Mars. Go to mars-1.com.
Tell them they could promote taking applications on our radio show.
Yeah, they got 78,000 in just 3 days. I don't think they need much promotion.
Nice.
They are good to go.
Wow.
Let's see. Mars One team. Oh, say, there you go. We already got Bas Lansdorp, who's a co-founder and CEO of the Netherlands.
Contact you. I just might do it.
Or is it dude
you
from
never
Canada?
All he can do is say no to me.
Brian Versteeg. He's from Canada. And got a bunch of folks. Oh, here's a Norbert Kraft. He's from America.
Maybe we can book one of these guys. That'd be so cool.
They got an Italian chick that's pretty hot. So there you go. Human get risks and challenges.
Heck yeah.
Mars One has developed a mission to establish a human settlement. I know this. Damn it, just give me the list. Human. Oh, man. Cost overruns. This is what y'all were talking about. They're not uncommon in large projects in any arena. The risk for cost overrun in the Mars One mission is reduced by using existing technologies and by the fact that about 66% of the cost is associated with launch and landing, both of which are well understood and proven variables. The proposed Mars One budget includes a large safety margin to take into account significant mission failures, as well as smaller but costly features of components on Mars. Mars One has developed a detailed risk analysis profile, which guides both its internal technical development as well as the relationship it builds with its aerospace suppliers. The risk analysis profile will continue to evolve and improve over the years prior to the first humans walking on the planet Mars.
Nice. Now, another thing is they're actually using money from the applications to go towards this whole thing.
Yeah, you can donate at their website. You can buy merchandise.
Oh, cool.
Here's my deal. I wonder how many backups they're going to have because, you know, they're mentioning years of training. Well, we're humans. How do you know that 2 or 3, 40, whatever, you know, they selected 40 people and they all died before the mission.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you have to have 2 years of training, right? So in 2 years, or right before the end of the 2 years, one of those people die. Do they postpone the mission because they got to wait another 2 years to train another person, or they just go with what they got?
Now the backups will train too.
Yeah, everybody's going to train. Now the other thing is, say, because I think it takes 6 years to train, right? What if, you know, sometime within that 6 years and that day comes and you're the one that's picked to go? Because it's going to be a reality show where they pick the people that go based on the popularity from the show, you know? And what if you're one of those people picked to go and then all of a sudden you get, you know, that regret and you're like, you know what, I don't want to do this. Contractually, what could happen to you?
We'll do that.
Yeah. Do they do it like Survivor and vote you off?
Yeah, pretty much. Now, but what's cool, though, is everybody that does go will be making history, you know?
Yep.
There's going to be memorials based on them, books written, TV shows, everything.
Honestly, if the plan succeeds, they'll be followed by more groups spaced every 2 years.
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, it only takes one successful mission to know the logistics behind everything.
Yeah.
Well, and they can start. So if they keep sending people, then what do they do then? Do they make their own constitution? Do they set up a democracy? Who's going to be president? How do they do election?
Yeah.
Apparently, you know, scheduled to go in
2023. Huh?
Apparently, this is scheduled to go sometime in 2023.
Yep.
Well, I'm just saying, when you're dealing with human beings, right? You got to have some kind of sense of order. You can't function on chaos.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they've already thought about all this.
So what are they going to do? You know, is Martin going to become king of Mars?
Yes.
No, not going to happen.
That has to happen. That, you know, because, you know, with a last name like Bravo, I mean, I can't not be the King of Mars.
Nice.
Now, then Jeff, since we're getting close to the end of the show, then Jeff, Martin will indeed be the paranormal, or not the paranormal, but he will be the sex symbol of Mars.
Hey, you know, that's another great thing. Would a ghost box or a recorder work on Mars? Like, if
Would you even be able to investigate paranormal on Mars? Were there civilizations at some point and they died, right? And
right.
If they did, is it the same there as it is here as far as another dimension, right? Which I would think would be if you follow the rules of how the whole universe works, right? If you dip into religion a little bit. But so, because if you're into the religion part, then that would happen any planet, right? So, my question would be, you know, would you be able to paranormal investigate on Mars? You would have to make whole new equipment, Martin.
Heck yeah, that'd be awesome. I think that would be the goal, like, because if you can receive EVP on Mars, then can you be anywhere in the universe and receive EVP? You know,
right.
where does it stop? How far out can you go and you not get anything? That'd be pretty cool.
Let's send EVP questions out to the universe and see if we get a response. Let's go to one of those dishes that million-dollar dishes that send radio waves out to the universe. You know, they play old programs or whatnot. Or what they say is, like, television transmissions and that kind of thing that have been blasted out from the Earth ever since they were invented. You know, some places they're just now getting television broadcasts that when television was first invented, right?
Yeah.
It takes long to go across the universe. But, yeah, let's get some EVP questions and let's send them out. See if we get a response.
I think we should. Sweet. My phone is about to die in like 30 seconds.
Well, we're about to go off air, so yeah.
Sweet.
Who's on the show next week?
Next week is psychic medium Morgan Lynn out of Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Cool.
I interviewed her from Terrify Radio. She's a really great person to interview, so we'll have a lot of fun with her. So that's who's on the show next week.
Cool.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that's it, guys. Remember, there's shows tomorrow all the way through Friday, 8 p.m. Central. Terrify Radio, we have Christina George. So that's
cool.
It. Everybody have a good night and happy Mother's Day. And Jeff, play us out.
Awesome. Have a good night, everybody.
I don't mind.